Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston's Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610, and it's about that time to go around the NFL, which is brought to you by Quick Assist, your no-hassle solution to reselling your tickets across every marketplace. Download Quick Assist from your app store today. That's Q-U-I-C-K-A-S-Y-S-T, Quick Assist, your ticket everywhere. And we saw what was a pretty fun football game on Thursday Night Football, thankfully. A shout out to the Vikings and the Rams giving us some entertaining football, where sometimes Thursday Night Football isn't always that. It will be entertaining again next week as well, because your Texans will travel to New York to face off, or New Jersey, I guess, to face off against the Jets. So we'll have back-to-back interesting Thursday Night Football games here. But the Vikings, again, mad about a call in a primetime game. This time about a no-call, in fact, actually, no-call face mask in the 30-20 loss to the Rams. First of all, just like the idea that the Rams popped up, obviously getting a couple of important players back in Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, both of them returning. But the idea that the Rams, two-win Rams, or I guess now three-win Rams, go and knock off a Vikings team that seems like one of the few really good ones in the league.
Well, and, you know, getting those two guys back is everything. I mean, we've seen what Matt Stafford can do, but the other part of it, you know, he was in, I guess, I don't know if it was a report, trade rumors, trade, you know, talks, discussions with those Vikings themselves. So I found that very interesting. But look, man, it was the ability to get the most out of a running back with that complement of receivers. That is something that we could like to see over here, you know, get those receivers going while the running game is still doing well.
Yeah, mentioned nicely on the YouTube, the AFC West, I guess they call them scrub teams, I don't know, but the AFC West, like teams that are not doing all the well this year, have just been knocking off some of the really good teams, and this is another one of those. But as you mentioned, like, there's good reason. Cooper Kupp was dealing with an ankle, Puka Nacua was dealing with a knee injury, and they both return, both factor in a big way. Cooper Kupp just looked, I mean, you could tell that he is a quarterback's best friend, and it makes sense as to why teams are kind of interested, or I guess the Rams have been trying to like kind of push him around in possibly trade talks, because the chemistry between him and Matt Stafford was it looked like they back like he never left, right? It just came right back. There was a point in time where they throw a wheel route where he looks like he's pretty much double covered. He's like, throw that up there, he'll go get it. Yeah. And he does, and that helped them go to a victory. Now, mentioning the idea that Cooper Kupp has been bandied about in potential trade talks, Sean McVay was asked about it, and he said, no, I'm happy with Cooper Kupp being here, and I anticipate that remaining the case. Very particular way of saying that.
I anticipate.
Do you think he remains on this team throughout the season?
I really do. I think there was one beat reporter from Minneapolis, from Minnesota, that said there was really not, you know, it was just a talk. It wasn't anything that was going to happen. Nevertheless, we talked about it yesterday, you know, Cooper Kupp, when healthy, is still that guy. It's just a matter of staying healthy.
All right, let's get to the real spicy part of it, which is the no call face mask penalty. So there was a sack in the course of this game, three sacks on the Vikings, and the third of which was super important. It was in the end zone as Sam Darnold is trying to lead a drive to hopefully go tie, or actually go tie the game.
It was, I think,
a 28-20 victory at that point, or 28-20 score rather at that point. And the Vikings need to go score, get a two-point conversion to get themselves an opportunity, maybe push towards overtime, or even possibly move forward and win the game. They start that drive. He's in his end zone, and, you know, in trying to evade a player, he gets brought down. But it is very clear that a hand goes into his face mask and his helmet turns. That does not get called. And the referee says he just didn't see it.
He was 3 feet away, maybe five. He was not far away looking at the play. And, oh, by the way, of all the penalties in football, is there a more obvious one than face masking? I mean, the head just snaps to the side.
Right. Oftentimes, you know? Yeah, that head spins around and it becomes evident that what is happening there. You could even see, like, this has gone Zapruder film at this point. Mm-hmm. You see people breaking it down, and I don't remember. Was it Jerry Verse? I can't remember exactly the defensive player now that I think about it. But as he's running away from the play, he puts his hand on the side of his helmet as if to, like, kind of say, oh, goodness, yeah. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And yet and still, it ultimately goes down as a sack, making a 10-point game as opposed to being a penalty that moves them up the field. And Vikings fans are already doing the thing that Vikings fans do, which is like complaining to everybody and letting people know that, hey, man, this this isn't fair. We need to change rules and all those things. They still would have lost, right?
Oh, yeah. See, we're seeing a lot of that. And you referenced it, you know, because technically they could have gone and tied. They weren't going to win that game. But here's the other part of this that I found interesting, because we've had, you know, Glovegate here in Houston. Black face mask, black glove.
Ah!
Did you notice that?
I did not think about that, but that's a great point.
There is a black face mask, black glove. There's a still image.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, hey, every little edge counts, and clearly it did.
So now this has to just be like a policy all the way around.
Yes.
Like, I mean, obviously, it already should be a policy after the red glove fiasco.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Literally caught red-handed, Laramie Tunsil was.
I mean, the thing was, I mean, his head just snapped.
Just spun around.
But he did have a black glove on that black face mask.
And so he ended up getting a safety instead of what should have been a penalty. And so, yeah, they keep going there. Nose 281, Nico Collins is not coming back this week. The responsibility still remains on Diggs and Dell, and, you know, probably Dalton Schultz. Those are probably the three pass catchers that you key in on the most when it comes to this game, just like the last few games. And you hope that they produce in a bigger way than the last few games. And, of course, that'll be helped out by the offensive line. Some other things around the NFL. This was a really weird... Oh, actually, before I move forward, I did want to highlight the fact that J.J. Watt sound off on the face mask pulling of sorts, and he put a tweet up at 10:09 p.m. saying, can't see a face mask 3 feet in front of him, but we want to say we want refs to decide what is and is not a hip drop tackle in real time.
Yeah, he's not wrong. I mean, there's evidence right in front of you, right there, right in front of the referee. And the hip drop thing is just... It's just so silly. They're not even enforcing it.
Yeah.
They're fining people. Someone got fined today. This morning I saw someone got fined for a hip drop tackle, but that's about the extent of it after they watch film.
Yeah, I don't know how you fix that necessarily, besides, like, hey, even more referees on the field. You know, like, even more officials to maybe break down more of the responsibilities of, okay, well, now you have, instead of having to look at all of these things, you just have these things. But, the human element of this is going to dictate, and with the abundance of rules that the NFL actually has, when you think about it, you're going to have these issues happen. That, and I don't know if that's like a good thing to say. I don't think that's going to make anybody feel better about
it.
But this is the nature of playing the game, right? Unless we somehow automate it, which I don't know how you do either.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a weird story as we move around the NFL. Did you see this with the Denver Broncos wide receiver?
Mm-hmm. Josh Reynolds, Texas A&M zone.
Yeah, A&M alum. This was last week, in fact. He's been on IR with, I believe, a broken finger or finger injury of some sorts. I'll have to circle back. But him and another man were injured in a shooting early Friday. Obviously, not this Friday. Last Friday morning in Denver, as they were followed from a strip club. So I saw, like, injured strip club. I was like, all right, what happened there?
Yeah. And
first of all, like, if he had said club, I understand some level of shooting. Not necessarily that it's a good thing, but I understand it.
Right.
Like, people beginning fights at the strip club. But okay, moving forward, it wasn't at the strip club, although I imagine that there was probably something that happened there. It was 3 a.m. October 18th, so literally a week ago. Someone called 911 about a shooting near East Hampton Avenue in Denver. And it was reported as a blue Ford Bronco. And she said someone had been shot. And we ultimately obviously find out that Josh Reynolds is one of these people. Apparently that they had left the strip club and were followed. And then were shot at as they were going, to the point where it incapacitated the car.
Yeah.
And then they got out, and I believe he was hit in the back of the head.
It, like, grazed on the back of the head and then hit in the, was it the hand or arm or something like that? But it, I was right there with you when I saw. I was like, oh Lord, what happened? But it sounded like this was sort of like someone out to get them, you know, whatever. You know, you can only speculate. But they were leaving the club and got followed and
that happened.
Yeah, man, Lee in a booty club, man. That's that's wild. Now, this was happening, or they left around 2:45, apparently it says. There were no problems at the club, according to court documents. It just seemed like that somebody
had an eye on them.
They were being targeted, right? Yeah. I feel bad because I don't want to like victim blame in this instance, right? And what is a terrible situation, but my mind immediately went to, damn, that's why nothing good happens after 2 a.m.
Thank you. You sound like my parents.
That's exactly why I was like, oh, okay. I just hear the voice of a parent saying, yeah, that's why you should have had your ass at home.
Yeah. I told my kids, anything you can do before 2 a.m., and anything you can do after 2 a.m., you can do before 2 a.m.
That's right. And yeah, so it's really, really terrible. He was already on IR, as I mentioned, but it's really sad to hear this and yet another person getting shot in the NFL. Like, it seems like this is happening more frequently in a frustrating way, as the NFL has actually gotten a lot better about some of these kind of off the field incidents. Because if you remember, like maybe like a decade ago, it felt like there was just so many, especially in the offseason, where you know you had that time period of the year in the offseason where there wasn't a lot to talk about and everybody turned to their crime blotter. And all of a sudden, you had a ton of these, right? It feels like the NFL has gotten better about this, except all of a sudden, you're getting people shot at them.
Yeah.
That's a wild thing to see. Some other things around the NFL. Apparently, there is a new, like, happening food in the NFL.
I love this.
And The Athletic did a piece about this, and it's apparently the Uncrustable. So, they'd actually done a piece a few years back about how, like, orange slices, funny enough, right? Not this is not your child's soccer game, but in the NFL, orange slices were a big time kind of halftime snack, just to kind of, you know, obviously get the vitamins, energy. Those types of things. But apparently, in the course of reporting that, they'd found that quite a few players were like skipping the citrus and going and getting Uncrustables. And this is apparently become a big thing. If you're not familiar with the Uncrustable, it's a particular brand of pre-made peanut butter and jelly sandwich with no crust on it, right? They kind of cinch it on the edges. It's almost like an empanada in some ways.
And then, like a whole empanada, like a round one.
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, we have consumption numbers, and not exact.
This is crazy.
But we have rough consumption numbers, and the team consuming the most on a weekly basis, on estimate, is the Denver Broncos, supposedly consuming about 700 Uncrustables a week.
It's the thing is, they're delicious. Are you an Uncrustable fan? They're okay. You do.
I don't do the Uncrustable. I will make my own PB&J. I'm not above the PB&J. I love it.
I am
but
too.
I make it myself,
and I'll make it myself. Except when you go play golf, stick a couple of those in your golf bag. They last all day, or wherever in your cooler. They're perfect golf snack.
That's my problem, and I hate to be like a hippy dippy guy or whatever. I'm like, hey man, why these last so long? There feels like there's probably some more preservatives in here than I should.
You'll thank them when you're on the golf course. So 80,000 league wide, 80,000 Uncrustables a year.
Yeah, anywhere from what we're seeing, like obviously I mentioned 700 at the high end. There's some other teams that are maybe in the 200s, 100s. The lowest one of the reported teams was a tie between Cincinnati and New Orleans, who apparently go through 50 a week. So, like, in theory, you maybe have, like...
That's like four guys.
Yeah. you can maybe even visualize it as basically one per guy on the team every week. Now, we don't have numbers on the Texans, because they are one of the, eight teams that did not get numbers on. But I'm super... Like, if you were to guess... What would you think? Where do you think?
Oh, they do it. I would imagine young team. I mean, peanut butter and jelly is not necessarily a young thing, but Uncrustables are new, relatively. You know, so maybe they've had them in their lunch.
Uncrustables for a while, man.
But how long? Not a whole. I mean, 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're the generation of Uncrustables.
That was some of what I was thinking.
Yeah. So I'm thinking they had them packed in their lunches in elementary school. I'm going to say pretty high. I'm going to say they're on the high end, 300-ish a week.
And what's funny is when I saw this, I immediately thought back to there was reporting done, and I can't remember how far back it was. Apparently, the NBA also big on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, right? Like, that's one of the favorite snacks in the NBA when you're in the locker room. So, just sports love PB&J. It's a great way to get some protein, quick snack, you know, tasty, easy. Shout out to the PB&J holding down the athletes.
It's the best. From the 281, how many Uncrustables do you have on your boat, OG? Here's what I do on my boat. I put a box of Uncrustables in the freezer, and then when I get on the boat, I put a couple of them on my dash on the boat. Yes, I eat Uncrustables on the boat too.
Okay. All that reminded me is that I got PB&J stuff in the car, or in the house rather, and I have not had a PBJ in a while. So
now you're going to have one.
Yes, absolutely. I will have one today. And finally, before we go around the NFL, apparently ESPN is exploring the idea of a late night show with Jason Kelce.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Jason Kelce, obviously the former center in the NFL, he's working with ESPN on their Monday Night Countdown. I guess they're thinking about having an NFL films produced and a show that's licensed to ESPN air five straight Friday nights starting in January. And the hope is that the show will create clips that'll go viral.
Mm-hmm.
But then also just like a Friday night talk show. Are you interested in the concept? Does it seem like something where, that you might watch, or is that just like whatever?
I think I might check in on it. I'm not like, oh, I got to see that. But I do think this is where ESPN, and we know this, it's not breaking news. I mean, this is what ESPN is focusing on, you know, just personalities,
yeah,
and sort of radio show on TV type stuff, podcasts on TV, or podcast streaming as well, because they obviously are going to stream it. The other thing is, man, how much money does Jason Kelce need? I mean, what was it, 100 and something million for their podcast?
I mean, I don't recall.
I guess more is the
type
answer.
Of stuff that makes me feel sick. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's one thing I always, because you can ask that question about these billionaires that are constantly
more.
I don't know that I've seen a rich person that is that has operated with the concept of enough money.
I'm good.
Right? Like, there's, I have enough. It's cool. No, yeah. There's always
opportunity
need more. For more.
We need more.
Somebody said they're over the Kelces, especially Jason Kelce. I can understand, and that's, I've seen a lot of people with that perspective, especially like the kind of tangential or way that it links back to Taylor Swift, and everybody was sick of that. People were like, I'm done with the Kelces, and ESPN's like, would you like a Friday night talk show with Jason Kelce? That's what I heard. That sounds like you want more Jason
Kelce. My favorite thing that Jason Kelce does right now is that bar conversation with the bull on the Buffalo Wild Wings commercials.
Ah, yeah. Where
I love that bull. I love that big bull.
Isn't it a bison or a buffalo?
Bison, whatever.
It's
still a bull, isn't it? It's a bull bison.
Oh, like as
the
in
bull
like
buffalo.
That's
it's a male.
That's a sex male.
Yeah,
versus,
yeah. Female. But that guy's funny. It's all about the voice. Got a funny voice.
Okay, all
that's,
right.
That's my favorite.
So it
Jason
sounds like
Kelce
Lopez is in on Friday nights with Jason Kelce.
As long as the buffalo is on it.
Okay. First guess. First guess. I think. All right. That's around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. It's a football Friday. In the loop. So coming up next, what are the matchups that you're interested in this Texans Colts game? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss that next.
Atitula.
Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. What are the matchups in this upcoming AFC South battle that you are looking most forward to? John Lopez, Reginald Atitula, Byron Matthews in for the man Figgy Fig on the day. And look, you got this game that is important. Even if I'm not afraid of it, are you 5-point favorite?
Yeah.
In this one, your Houston Texans, the odds makers and the bettors have a lot of confidence in your Houston Texans in this game. All of the consternation about offensive line aside, like, it's just clear. This is a better team.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you need to go through all the processes to make sure that you are not forgetting anything. So what are the places where the matchups happen that you are interested in? Plus, I kind of have a little question that's come in on the Twitch that I want to get to eventually on the back end, but I think it ties into one of the matchups that you could possibly see.
Well, you know, one of the things I mentioned in terms of like the two most important players, you know, if you don't count the offensive line big picture, Joe Mixon, that, to me, that's not necessarily a matchup. The other one that's interesting to me is Tank Dell. You know, how is Tank Dell? They're not good against the run. They're not great against the pass, the Colts defense. But Tank Dell finding space, because the Colts defense is going to be so tuned in and plugged in on stopping Joe Mixon. And so aware of Stephon Diggs with no Nico Collins on the field. So that points to one guy. That points to, you know, obviously C.J. Stroud has to get it done, but it points to Tank Dell having that quote-unquote breakout game, which we are still waiting for. Now, the particular matchup, I can't tell you exactly how the game plan is for the Colts, but I guarantee you it's going to be underneath stuff, you know, maybe, you know, a safety he can get matched up on, et cetera.
Yeah, interestingly enough, this Colts team has run quite a bit of cover two. Even
yes, they have.
Gus Bradley kind of is a cover three guy, and I think a majority of their stuff is still cover three, but they've done a decent amount of cover two as well. It feels like just having those deep safeties has been one of the limiting factors for Tank Dell. in some ways, like outside of like the end of rounds or whatever that you saw early to get him the ball.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a lot of stuff. There's been like kind of outs, like maybe some speed outs or whatever that have gotten the ball. It doesn't feel like there's been a lot of things that have been utilized to get him the ball. And I wonder how much that is like. There, CJ is having to pat the ball a little bit and not able to get, you know, some of the deep shots that he really wants to. The only player that feels like they've gotten a lot of deep shots out of was Nico Collins, who obviously is out with that hamstring injury.
So that points to Tank as well.
That if you can get to some of those things, right, especially if they get into some of these cover three looks where you have an opportunity to maybe manipulate and attack those. One of the things that I think is clearly there with the guys that are returning, obviously DeForest Buckner, but the one that's really important, Jonathan Taylor. That is probably one of the pieces that the Colts have that is really notable that you have to make sure, hey.
Yeah, yeah.
let's focus what we're doing here, because Jonathan Taylor, it's very evident what he brings as a running back. And hey, remember that you're missing some guys defensively. Although I think that you feel good about Neville Hewitt, and I believe, at least Jake Hansen handled himself well. I think it'll be interesting to see if Toto will play. Now, he is practicing today.
They're
practicing
saw that.
Inside of NRG Stadium today, obviously preparing for that game that'll be played indoors on Sunday. But Toto is practicing today, which would maybe lead you to believe that he has a high probability of playing on the weekend. He has been good at getting upfield and getting into some of these tackles and maybe kind of put him in the place where he was capable of having a concussion, because he really fires himself in there. But those guys are going to be real vital in making sure to stop the run from JT's position of this.
Right. And by the way, also practicing today is Kamari Lassiter. And that speaks directly to another matchup for me that is going to be crucial.
Are you talking about the man who wears number 14 for the Colts?
That would be the man. Either him, Alec Pierce, or Josh Downs. I think Michael Pittman Jr. is going to be out there. And certainly, you know, we know what Derek Stingley can do, but Kamari Lassiter, a lot of pressure on him on however, you know, it matches up on the outside.
Yeah, you remember, right, that week one, we were looking at it after the game. We're like, yeah, they didn't take advantage of it, but they got running deep. Actually, they hit a couple.
But they missed too.
They definitely missed some.
They're coming back to that.
And Alec Pierce has run a vertical route on 54% of his routes. Like that is what he does. Right, that is what he do. Mm-hmm. Is Alec Pierce run vertical? And so
Kamari Lassiter, come on down.
Not a lot of teams have tested this secondary in a big way vertical. And I guess some of the things about it is when they've done that, especially over the middle of the field, you've gotten some Kalen Bullock ball hawking that's helped. You do wonder if you end up with those guys streaking down the sidelines, how that looks on those deep balls. And so it might be incumbent upon Kamari Lassiter to display his ability to get his hand on the football and break up passes as well. Yeah, that's definitely one of the ones that I'm looking forward to in this. And then, of course, we got to bring back the one that's obvious, the quarterback of the team, Anthony Richardson. We are back in week one. I feel the same emotions again, which is, I do wonder if this defensive pass rushing tandem, I guess entire group, right, all the way across, including Tim Settle, who has been handling his business on the defensive line, are they going to be able to get pressure still? Because week one, remember, we were like, huh, they're not really getting a lot of pressure, but that's because it felt like there was a lot of effort made sure to corral Anthony Richardson and not allow him to beat you with his legs, because you're damn sure not believing in his capability of beating you with his arm.
Mm-hmm.
So keep him kind of corralled. Are they going to be able to corral him, but then also get to him? That's going to be an interesting thing.
And that happened here last year in week two, you know, when they beat the Texans and he was, until injured, you know, he was really, really big. And that's also why you're not wrong about Jonathan Taylor and the inside linebackers, but I think it fits with Anthony Richardson and the inside linebackers. Toa, obviously, if he plays, Neville Hewitt and Jake Canton, because when they get that pressure outside, Anthony Richardson right up the middle, you better bring him down. So I think the linebackers, you know, have high alert, not just with Jonathan Taylor, but with Anthony Richardson, too.
You mentioned, you talked about Tank Dell, and somebody asked a question on the Twitch. Was letting Noah Brown go versus keeping John Metchie a good move for these Texans? Noah Brown, year to date, 14 catches, 185 yards. Metchie has one catch, single catch, 7 yards. And I was like, I don't know, but I mean, with the current situation, especially with Nico Collins out, you do wonder what could you have possibly gotten from Noah Brown that you have not gotten from Metchie, especially considering that there's still been a very clear effort to get the ball majority-wise to Stephon Diggs, Dalton Schultz, Tank Dell, to varying degrees of success, understandably, but that's still been the focus on getting the football when you're passing the ball. Do you think that looking back, that maybe that was the wrong way to go, or maybe what just evaluating what the difference and distinction that you maybe could have gotten from Noah Brown if he was
still? I think it's an interesting question. The problem is it wasn't going to happen this year. They were going to give John Metchie another year to see what happened, but that's not happening. He has one catch for 7 yards this year. The one thing that Noah Brown does, though, is block. He's a big time blocker. It's his calling card. He's really a tough dude, big dude. So maybe, but I just don't think it was ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. Thanks, Change Up H-Town on the Twitch for bringing that or asking that question. I think that was interesting. Going back to kind of matchups, offensive line has to come up here at some point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just are they going to handle up? And this feels like a matchup that should be advantageous. So if you look sorry in any way, shape, or form, Monday's not going to be fun. Right? I'll just I don't mean to say that
in any way.
I don't want that to sound like a threat, but that's just
not
that's
here,
the
not there,
that is
not
the
anywhere.
This Colts pass rush is 30th when it comes to quarterback pressure percentage. That quarterback should be able to execute in a way to handle his business. CJ Stroud should. So like, if y'all can't keep that man clean, if y'all can't give him an opportunity and space to step up mm-hmm. into the pocket, there's going to be some real issues after all the talk that we've had.
Look, you think it's bad now. if that issue with the Colts and the defense that is already, you know, established is not good, then it's going to be off the charts next week.
Yeah, y'all better not break CJ Stroud's streak.
Yeah.
In all, was it three times that he has played the Colts?
Mm-hmm.
Two touchdowns, no interceptions.
That's right.
It's either two touchdowns, no interceptions, or three touchdowns, no interceptions, or four. It better not change. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And especially, you know, with as bad as the Colts defensive front has been bringing pressure.
Yeah, so those are kind of the matchups. Are there any other matchups that you're thinking about that, like, hey, that's something I'm looking out for? I keep coming back to this game, and I feel like, obviously, my job here, Sports Radio 610, mm-hmm. where the Texans play, you can hear the game noon. 9 a.m. is when pregame starts. I feel like I should be, you know, doing pumping this game up, and I don't think that I need to necessarily. Everybody listening, y'all Texans fan, but at the same time, this game does not seem like, when it comes to, like, the football of it.
It's a weird feeling.
I don't know that I have, like, I'm... There's not a lot that I'm like, hey, the football of it is super intriguing per se.
Right.
But like, besides the Texans themselves and what
exactly.
they need to do, as opposed to like
weird
how
feeling.
It meets up against what the Colts are doing.
Because you're kind of anxious but confident, which those two things don't normally jibe.
Right.
You know?
Like, yes.
Anxious about the line, anxious about, you know, several things.
If you can actually get the ball
but
to
you
some
feel
of these
like
players.
They're going to win.
Yes.
You know, it's weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Jonathan Taylor versus the Texans interior defensive line pops up on the YouTube. Absolutely. I think that this is where, you know, I feel confident about that, seeing the way that Tim Settle has played, Khalil Davis has played. What does Danico Autry continue to look like? I don't know if that's a matchup.
Good point.
But like, what does his continued role look like as he rolls himself more mm-hmm. into the shape of actual playing, as opposed to kind of just keeping himself close to game shape?
And getting into it, yeah.
Right. I want to see what, and does that mean that he's going to get more snaps at that three technique,
mm-hmm.
or is it going to kind of continue to be some of this kind of rotating in and really getting kind of just the pass rush options or opportunities, I should say.
Yeah.
All right. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you rocking with us. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including the Rockets at home tonight against one of the better tests in the early part of their season, the Grizzlies. We'll talk about that and more next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, let's get into What's Poppin' here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610 with John Lopez, myself, Reginald Atula, and for the day, Byron Matthews, who's in for Figgy Fig, still dealing with... How long does food poisoning typically last?
Generally a day, right? Maybe longer.
Yeah, I was like, I hadn't longer. Thought about it that much, and I mean, look, Figgy, feel better. But I was just like, huh? I don't really think about it because I'm pretty fortunate. I don't get sick.
I haven't had it much,
often.
But I got it 2 years ago,
yeah.
And that's why I don't go to Chipotle anymore.
Okay,
no offense.
Yeah, I don't know if you can say no offense on the backside of that one. Make it work. I don't think that one's going to clean up.
But man, it was bad.
All right, don't start giving details. It's Friday, and we're right about lunch.
It was wild, man.
Don't do that. People are going to get to lunch. There are people that are gearing up to go out to Taqueria Sarandas.
All I said was, it was wild, man.
To see our guys, Clint and Ron, of the drive.
Yeah.
Now I think about it, I kind of wanted to go to Taqueria Sarandas after the show now, too.
You should. You absolutely should.
All right. That's later.
Or
right
the
now.
Chile relleno.
Not doing that. I'm about to get some enchiladas.
All right.
That's right. What's really calling to you.
That'll work.
All right. Your favorite. Your favorite team is starting their quest to win four games in a championship.
You're just determined to do this, aren't
I am.
You?
That's right. World Series begins tonight. Dodgers, Yankees. Are you actually going to watch this?
Of course I am. And don't
see?
Yeah, of course.
Because your favorite team's playing. I gave you the option to be like, nah, I'm not that interested.
Screw them. No, of course I am. It's I don't care how you feel about them. And trust me, I'm with you no matter what anybody says about hating the Dodgers and the Yankees. It's an interesting series.
It is.
It's an interesting series.
Yeah, man. And it also has the opportunity to be an explosive series mm-hmm. because both these teams great at hitting the fastball.
Yeah.
Like you put a fastball in the wrong place and it is going yard and mm-hmm. It can happen multiple times because both of these lineups are pretty disgusting. Yeah, we could possibly see really big show in that way when it comes to
you got megastars. You know, Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. Again, setting aside anything you might think, that is a marquee right there. And then you've got, you know, as you mentioned, hell, Giancarlo, you know, has been he's traipsing into some pretty rarefied territory if he keeps it going.
Yeah,
the way he's playing.
Yeah, so yeah. Like that, there's a lot to baseball wise appreciate mm-hmm. within this. And then also, you just want Shohei to win, don't you?
I do want Shohei to win. I'm not running from. That's why I.
You also want Joe Kelly to win.
I do not want Joe Kelly.
I don't know. I'm just...
I could give two flips about old Joe Kelly, but no, it's an interesting.
That's
series.
Right, pal pals. It's also an interesting series when your favorite team is in it. Ain't that right, Lopez?
It absolutely is. The Astros when they were in it, it was very interesting.
I appreciate that evasion. You did a good job there. But yeah, so that gets going tonight. What also gets going tonight is the Rockets' second game of the season, an opportunity against probably one of your best tests really, really early. This Memphis Grizzlies team that is rejuvenated. It's funny how quickly time makes us lose perspective. Because the Grizzlies are not really talked about as like one of the good teams, even though like a few years ago, they were like the number two team in the West.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, you had some injuries and then you also had the suspension stuff that Ja Morant has done. Let me tell you, he's come back. He looks good at basketball again, guys.
He does. Look, man, this is going to be, and the Rockets need a good effort, if not a win outright tonight, because that was not a good start. And, you know, Ja Morant's back. Memphis is legit. That's a Dylan Brooks kind of revenge game, so to speak, from back in the day.
That is true.
You know, it's going to be a fun look. It's game two, but it's going to be a fun game to watch, and it's an important one for them to get going.
100%. 7 p.m. tonight. Steven Adams is still out. In thinking about the game on Wednesday, I was like, oh yeah, I wonder how much of a steadying force Steven Adams plays as a veteran, mm-hmm. right? Like, I know that. And with all due respect to Dylan Brooks, I don't know how much he is a steadying force because, you know, he's got some...
He's kind of the opposite of that.
You know what I mean? He's got a little chaos to him. Like, he's good at basketball, don't get me wrong. He's got a little chaos to him. Fred VanVleet is, in theory, a steadying force. I'm interested in how much of a steadying force Steven Adams is. You're not going to have him in this one. But you're also going against a Memphis team that's not going to have Jaren Jackson Jr., who's mm-hmm. a big defensive guy. Now, Santi Aldama played pretty well for them, and I don't know who he thought he was. He put up a whole mess of threes. Mm-hmm. I do wonder if this ends up being kind of a three-point game where Memphis is knocking him down, and then you have to ask yourself how you
we got to answer that.
But also, weirdly, Zach Edey, who was like, you know, multiple time player of the year in college basketball. He's going to be a vital part of what the Grizzlies do. Mm-hmm. He fouled out in 15 minutes in his first game.
And I thought that was interesting, the perspective I saw from a lot of people on that. Not so much like, oh, you know, this is the NBA. Hey, rookie, we're not going to give you all these calls. The perspective I saw, and I don't know if you did, is like...
This is why he can't cut it?
No, this is why he was officiated so liberally in college.
He was.
I mean, he's an aggressive, you know, physical player. And the thing that people are saying is like, refs in the NCAA were just giving him every call. It ain't going to happen now.
No. So I wonder if that's going to be a place where the Rockets can kind of attack. Is a guy who's going to be kind of a little bit lumbering, but, you know, down in the paint. Yeah. And this team likes getting downhill, as we know. We'll see how that ultimately plays out on a Friday night. Some other things that are popping. I didn't want to circle back to the J.J. Watt of it all, because he was talking about that Monday night football game or Thursday night football game. All the primetime games in my head are just Monday night football, it seems like. That's what it seems like. The Thursday night football game between the Vikings and the Rams, the missed face mask penalty. The idea that, hey, man, if they can't get that right when it's right in front of them, how do we expect them to get any of these things right? The league really hasn't had a correct hip drop tackle call all season.
No, and I think what the issue is, and JJ was saying, verbatim, can't see a face mask 3 feet in front of them, but we want refs to decide what is and isn't a hip drop tackle in real time. I think there's a lot there, and I think he's absolutely right. But I also feel like, It speaks to, and nobody wants a lot of replay reviews, but I believe it was the Rams, or they were one of the teams that proposed just last year that you should be able to review personal fouls on the quarterback and face masks and such, which is, you know, ironic because they got away with it. But certainly hip drop tackles, he's not wrong. I mean, he's not wrong. This is one where they don't get penalized or very rarely are penalized on the field, but then they get fined by the NFL. Well, that doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, it doesn't change. It doesn't affect the outcome of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The timing of it would be tough because you would have to be able to do these things pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But it almost feels like, as opposed to having things be like reviewable or not reviewable, just kind of allowing a additional replay ref to constantly be watching the game and be able to kind of buzz in, almost like in soccer VAR.
But they do. I mean, there's one in every stadium in the NFL.
Yeah, and just be like, hey, letting you know that one actually looks like it goes the other way. Instead of just having like a 2-minute booth review, have always the opportunity for a booth call down for review.
It kind of speaks to one thing, and I didn't even talk about this when we were mentioning the Longhorns and throwing the bottles on the field and changing the call and all that.
Acting a plump
fool. Acting foolish. Even Matthew McConaughey got mad at them, which is saying something.
I did appreciate that that the entirety of the Texas apparatus was like, we're going to make it abundantly clear that we do not endorse this. That we think that the way that was handled and the behavior was unacceptable, so that nobody gets the idea that, hey, this is something that can happen again.
But no, but here's where I was going with it. As much as like that was an awful scene in Austin, the referees looked at the replay in the stadium and changed the call. I mean, you will never convince me otherwise.
No.
It wasn't like, hey, we huddled and talked.
No, they huddled and they were like, you know what?
Look at the screen. look at the screen up there. And that's where I'm going with it. You know, maybe the NFL, even if it's sort of like a pseudo replay review where they see it up on the big screen and they go, all right, we need to huddle.
Yeah, this is the thing, right? They went and did that. And we all looked at it and they were like, oh, that's a bad precedent. Bad things are going to come. If you allow...
But they got it right.
Yeah. But sometimes getting it right is actually less important than feeling like there's belief in the administrative process.
Well, no. Look, they have pride and ego just like everybody else. But had someone gone up to the referee last night, and I don't even remember his name, and said, hey, man, I just looked at the replay upstairs in the stadium. It was a face mask.
And
at least get the call right is what I'm saying. That's where I'm going. Even if it's like a pseudo replay.
And I think I think we're on the same page, just in a different way. I think the being on the field and making that look would be tough. Have that person have an earpiece, which might be a lot, but like have somebody from up to, hey, actually.
Yeah.
Right? Like, let me hit this button. I mean, we do this on air, right? We have the benefit of having a producer that can get in our ear and be like, hey, here's a thing that you would not consider, or here's a thing that, you know what I mean? Like that kind of effect. Why not the NFL, with these guys that admittedly have a tough job, with all these dudes moving really fast on all their responsibilities, have an eye in the sky that's able to be like, as opposed to this gamification that we have when it comes to these
things. And pride and ego.
Right, it's like, well, if you have enough capital, if you still have a challenge in your pocket, then we can get the call right. But if not, and if you're in the right circumstance, maybe.
But it shouldn't even have to go there.
Exactly.
Like for all the ugliness in Austin, they got the call right. They ended because they looked at the big screen. You know, you can do that. Sort of wink, wink. I mean, hell, you were talking about, we have the luxury ourselves right here. When we're talking about is particle board wood. Byron Googled it, told me in my ear, particle borders wood. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, just do it something along those lines.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Yeah. if you'll allow me to bounce back to basketball one more time, the NBA Cup is the new name for the in-season tournament. That's one of the things that the league is trying to do to help
hang a banner,
incentivize, you know, playing and making it more interesting the regular season. As I blame the Golden State Warriors, what was that, 2017, 18, where they won, no, that was 19.
Wait, where are you going with it?
19, where they won 73 games, but ultimately lost the championship.
Oh, yeah.
And now nobody cares about the regular season. So the in-season tournament, the NBA Cup, rather, is what they call it now. That is going on. They've implemented that to make the regular season more interesting. And this season, the NBA Cup, again, has special courts that have been made for every team.
Oh, have you seen them?
Differentiate. I did. I took a quick look at them. The basic design is they have that NBA Cup trophy. I forget what the name of the trophy is, but they are, I guess it is the NBA Cup.
NBA Cup, baby,
right.
Yeah.
They have that imprinted on the center of the court and then in the both lanes at the baskets. But then also,
I'm looking at them.
They have the courts in the colors of the team, but then they have kind of like a shadow of sorts of something that ties into the team. And some of these are real ugly around the league. The Rockets,
that's a lot of red on the Rockets.
Yeah, the Rockets is really...
That's a lot of red.
It's gonna be harsh on the eyes.
Oh boy, is it.
But I appreciate at least that the shadow isn't bad. It just kind of looks like you're in a warp, like a warp tunnel, whatever, obviously alluding to like kind of liftoff or something.
Yeah.
1 to 10, 1 being awful, 10 being great. What do you give the court design?
Overall, some of these are pretty sweet, but man, all red court. I mean, ruby red for the Rockets. 10 is the worst.
10 is great. 1 is the worst.
4.
Wow.
How about you?
I probably go... I'm thinking too much about the design. I need to think about the color. Probably about a 5 or 6.
Yeah, Hornets is not good either. That's a lot of blue.
Now... The one thing about these courts as well is that they kind of were a little slick as well. And then also they were not made well. Remember the distance on the 3-point line was actually off early on. So hopefully they actually made these better. But yeah, there you go. The Rockets will have their court. And then they also have a really bright white Rockets logo in the middle. Yeah, we'll see what that ultimately looks like. But yeah, NBA Cup. We'll get to that later. Tonight, it's just can you get a win against a good Grizzlies team for the Rockets at 7 p.m.? You'll be watching a little bit of World Series baseball, so you see if your Dodgers can get game one in the course of this. And
maybe I should just own it.
You should.
I should just own it.
I'm not letting up. I'm not letting up to the end of the World Series. We're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. That's what's popping on this Friday as we head into the weekend towards Texans-Colts. That is also what's popping. You're going to have halftime Andre Johnson getting his Hall of Fame ring. Man, it couldn't happen to a better guy. It's going to be, I think the energy in there is going to be incredible.
Yeah,
there's not just a level of respect, there's also a level of love and some more emotions on top of that when it comes to Andre Johnson and this city. So that'll be really, really fun at halftime of that game. All right, coming up next, let's circle back around to some of the news. It was Warriors 2016. Thank you, Sean Pendergast.
Yeah.
We'll circle back around to some of the things that we're hearing from practice, and then also what Bobby Slowick said, not just about his role in this offensive line, but what they can do just generally to get themselves better offensively. We'll talk about that next.